5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
You make $5 million a year. I'm a jerk on the radio. I know better.
Those are facts. Print that. Tweet that.
I don't like people or teams or products that dodge the heavy lifting.
If you don't like what we say or anybody says, here's what I would suggest. Get a rating.
The idea that you preface your opinion by what your identity is to me insane.
You gotta be kidding me. You can't run this clown out of town fast enough.
This man is a disgrace. He's throwing everything away. Get him the hell out.
That is a take. It's a strong take. It's one of the best takes ever.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. Now, here's your host, Jason Barrett.
Greetings once again. I am Jason Barrett, and you've found the Barrett Sports Media Podcast presented by Core Image Studio. Visit coreimagestudio.com today to find out how to take your brand's imaging to the next level. We're up to episode number 10 of season 4, and I think you're going to enjoy today's conversation. My guest is Altitude Sports Radio 92.5 program director Dave Tepper. Dave's a well-traveled man who's run stations in Houston, Omaha, and of course currently in Denver. He started on the air and has worked as well in Austin and Los Angeles. Most of this season on the podcast, I've been talking to talent about their career journeys and observations of the sports radio business, so I thought I'd break things up and treat you to a programmer's perspective for once. That conversation with Dave is coming up in just a moment. If you're listening to this to get a better idea of how programmers view the industry, smart move on your part, but I'm going to do you one better. Our annual BSM Summit is coming to New York City on February 26th and 27th. We've announced 24 speakers so far, and that number will surely climb over the next 2 months. Ticket information can be found on bsmsummit.com. If you're in this business and trying to build relationships with executives and PDs to one day advance your career, this is the conference you can't afford to miss. I'm not telling you that just to sell a ticket. I'm mentioning it because last year, there were over 50 sports radio decision makers in the room at one time. I expect a similar turnout this year. Getting that many format leaders together in one city, in one room, for 2 straight days doesn't happen. So if you're serious about your future and you want to learn how to grow your ratings, revenue, and ultimately your relationships, I trust I'll see you in the Big Apple at the BSM Summit this February. That brings me to today's chat with Dave Tepper, and Dave is someone I would call an industry friend. I've known him for a long time. In fact, I work with him currently in Denver. I can't say enough about the job he's done building Altitude Sports Radio 92.5. The brand moved onto the FM dial in September 2018 and has made a lot of progress. There's still a lot of work ahead, but his leadership has that staff heading in the right direction. He does a great job. What's ironic is Dave and I now talk regularly, but nearly ended up in the same building in Houston years ago. I also passed the tip along to someone about Dave when I was programming the game in San Francisco, and that opened the door to his arrival in Omaha. You've heard the saying, I'm sure, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Well, when you do good work and make connections, it can pay big dividends, and I guess in some weird way, he and I were always meant to cross paths. We get into some of that stuff during the conversation, but there's plenty more to sink your teeth into. So without further delay, here's my chat with Altitude Sports Radio 92.5 program director, Dave Tepper.
3, 2, 1.
You're a man of many travels. California, Texas, now Colorado, Nebraska in there as well. Go back to the beginning. When did you first start listening to not just sports radio, but talk radio in general? Who was it that that lured you in?
Oh, proudly Howard Stern. And still to this day, I listen. It was in high school. I remember a buddy of mine, his mom was driving us to school. And she let us listen to it. He wanted to turn it on. You know, Mark and Brian, they were the big show out there at the time, and it just wasn't really for me. And it was just so different, so edgy, so original. That was really what it was.
How did that lead to your first job in radio? Where was it?
It was actually Stern's LA station, KLSX, because I was a stand-up comic to get started. So to get on radio first and foremost, I owe to Frazier Smith, who was a longtime radio guy. out in Michigan, and he was a comic, and I was a comic at the Laugh Factory, and we were there together, and I wasn't as good of a comic as I had hoped to be, but I was good enough. I was making money there, and so he and I would MC Friday and Saturday nights, and he knew I was a big Stern guy. He got an opportunity on a Saturday night to be able to do a show called Fraser Smith Live. And he asked me, he's like, do you want to, I know you're a big Stern guy, you want to come and be a sidekick, maybe write some sports poems or whatever it is, see if it's for you. So I went in once, and he thought I was good enough to do it, and he asked me to come in again. And that was really pretty much about it. You know, I didn't make the most of my stand-up situation. I mean, gosh, I was like 19 years old. I kind of look back, and everything works out how it should. But it was through him. So my first opportunity on air was at KLSX, and I'm sitting there surrounded by Howard Stern stuff everywhere. And I thought, man, I made it. Little did I know how difficult radio actually turned out to be. But that was a really it was a really cool moment.
So you went from there. You wound up joining KABC at one point, right?
I did, yeah. So that ended up running its course, like in radio. We did that show for about a year on KLSX, and then that movie show came in and bought the time. And I kind of had to decide, what do I want to be doing? And I really loved it. I loved radio. Jim Rome was a big influence. Phil Hendry was a big influence. And I decided, listen, I want to take this path over stand-up. So I got a promotions gig and a part-time producer job running a motorman Leon Kaplan early Saturday mornings for KABC. I got to be a fill-in producer for Larry Elder a lot, which was very entertaining. I would drive down to San Diego. I got an opportunity down there. I'd go on every week, and I would record. It was a Generation X show. It was like a news talk show for, you know, young folks. Never really went anywhere, but I was doing that. And I kept trying to get over to the sports station, though, because KBC was in the same building on La Cienega as the ESPN station was in L.A. And I could never get an opportunity over there. I remember the marketing director, she said to me, you know, don't be afraid to go to a smaller market. That's what a lot of people do. This is a tough market to work your way up in. And I ended up going to Austin, Texas from there.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. And what's interesting, she's given you that advice, which is true, but yet your first break was actually on the air market too.
I know.
Which is nuts.
I know.
So along those lines, she gives you that advice. You do wind up going to Austin, Texas. How did that situation come about?
Radio can be cruel. It was funny because there was a program director out there. I'll say I reached out to him. He was running 1300 The Zone. And my wife is from Austin, you know, so I'd never been out there before. But we went out to a Longhorn game once, and I thought, this is after I was getting that advice, and I thought, this might be a really cool place to come. You know, it's a good college town, smaller market, you know, 50 market range, something like that size. And so I started dealing with this program director. I'll leave his name off the record as much as I don't when we're actually telling the story. But long story short of it, I went out, I met up with him over Thanksgiving, gave me a tour of the city. He knew I was trying to get going. He says, I'll tell you what, I'll give you an opportunity on weekends on air doing some stuff. You know, it was the Longhorn flagship station. I'll give you some promotions hours all along the way. I said, great. So we weren't married at the time, but Rachel, my girlfriend then, my wife now, she's like, well, let's go do this. I love that city. She went to UT. I fell in love with the city real quick. I'm going out there. I'm looking for apartments. I'm reaching out to this guy. I'm like, hey, is this still cool? I'm coming. Yeah, man, absolutely. We're going to do this, going to do that. No problem. I said, hey, I got a place. I just quit my job. I'm coming. Yeah, let me know when you get to town. We'll make sure we get you going. I say, great. My family, of course, my friends, they're all in California. What are you doing? Like, what are you doing out there going to Texas? I said, I'm going to see if I can figure out sports radio. And I get out there, and he would not return a phone call.
That is terrible.
He would not return a phone call. And I remember going to the station, trying to see him, going to station events, trying to see him.
You become like Jim Carrey and Cable Guy, knocking on the door all the time. Tried calling you 13 times. I was in the bathroom, thought you might have called.
Pretty much, man. I mean, it was scary, man. It was miserable.
Hi, program director. There's a stalker outside the front door waiting to get in. Says you hired him.
Yeah, pretty much. And he wouldn't return a call, wouldn't come out. And it was funny because I remember I went to one of the station remotes and one of the afternoon guys was like, hey, I heard of you. Are you the guy from San Diego? I was like, well, I'm from Southern California. He goes, yeah, I heard you might be coming out. I was like, yeah, I'm here. Like, where is your program director? He's like, oh, I'll let him know you. So you know what, though? It was tough, man. It was a very tough time because there I was in the middle of the country in a city I did not know with an opportunity that really was not there. And it was a rough, rough time. But things happened the way that they should. That was actually where I ended up getting an opportunity at a startup sports station, which was a news talk at the time. I started working for a house radio station, believe it or not, to keep my resume going, running the studio while DJ Boogie is downtown at Paradox on 6th and Trinity doing his thing.
I'm guessing you tried to hire DJ Boogie at least a few times.
I actually ran into him in Houston, though, as funny as his business is. But actually, it turned out to be great, and things do work out, and you got to really believe and have faith in your plan, because I ended up meeting a guy named John Madani, who is a really good friend and mentor of mine now, and he just had a free internship, and it was news at the time, but he said, hey, if you're interested in sports, this is actually going to become an ESPN station here in a couple of weeks. Do you want to get your foot in the door? And I had nothing else going, and I at that time I was working for a place called the Christmas Corner. It was a Christmas ornament place in Buda, Texas. I'd go there and unload trucks at 3 a.m. in the summertime, and I started to get my foot in the door with him, and it couldn't have turned out better, because that's where I really started to get the opportunity as I moved to Austin.
So you spent how long in Austin? 5-6 years?
It was about 6 years, yeah.
And so once you got that internship and Madani brings you in, take me through some of those experiences as you grew as, I mean, this is your first real venture into radio, working, on a permanent basis. You're getting a check from a station permanently to be involved in a number of different areas because you were on the air, you did updates, you did hosting. Take me through what you learned in Austin.
Moves like that are priceless because, Austin ended up in Omaha. Those kinds of opportunities, I'll tell you, that marketing director in LA was right about it, because when you get yourself into a smaller market, your experience opportunities grow tremendously. So I was an unpaid intern there in Austin for a morning show for a guy named Paul Pryor who was doing news, and he was trying to start to do sports. And it was one of those right place, right time things where he ended up falling, like taking a walk one morning. And it was one of those radio stories where all of a sudden, John Madani, the PD, he calls me. This is like 15 minutes before the show is about to go on. And Paul Pryor's co-host was a guy named the Rugman out of Cincinnati. And
I'm picturing a market with DJ Boogie and the Rugman.
I mean, this business is something. And so when they flipped it to sports, John hired this guy, the Rugman, to be Paul Pryor's co-host because he was a big sports guy from Cincinnati. And this guy was a character, man, a rock and roll guy, long hair, loved his whiskey, stayed up all night. I mean, he partied hard and was one of the most unique guys I got to know. So I get this call about 15 minutes before a show, and Madani goes, Paul Pryor just called me. He can't get in. He like the old commercial, I've fallen, I can't get up. This guy couldn't get in. He's like, so jump in there with the Rugman today and just do the best you can do. So we did. And he thought it was pretty good. Paul ended up coming back. They started doing the show a bit. I was still just free interning and doing updates. And the poor guy fell again in his shower.
Oh, man.
Because he had like a cast or something on his leg because he was walking around a lake. He like hurt his hip. Then he was at. So then they're like, all right, jump in there again. So I did. And one thing led to another really fast. All of a sudden, it was Paul wasn't coming back. And all of a sudden, it went from being an unpaid intern to update guy to being at the right place at the right time to all of a sudden, it was Tepper and the Rugman's mornings on the ESPN affiliate in Austin, Texas.
Exactly how you designed it from the day one that you decided you're going to pursue the business. Like, my break is going to be Tepper and the Rugman in Austin, Texas,
yeah.
When I'm a Southern California kid.
Yeah.
So from Austin, you wind up staying in state, but you moved to Houston, bigger market, top 10 market. And your stint there is kind of like a bunch of different chapters because you go in, Cumulus owns it. It eventually is owned by Gal Media. Describe what the first couple years were like with Cumulus owning the station, because you wound up being on air, you were an APD, and then eventually you became a PD under their watch.
It's funny because John Madani gave my break in Austin. he gave me my break in Houston. He ended up in Memphis, came back to start this radio station, and he brought me over. I was working for iHeart there at the time. I was producing Charlie Polillo, which I enjoyed a lot. And I told him, I said, he wanted me to produce an afternoon show there. It was Jorge Vargas and Jerome Solomon. Mm-hmm. And I told John, I said, I'd love to do it, but I'm actually getting kind of interested in your side of the ball, the management side of it. And I said, I'd like to learn a little bit underneath you. And he said, sure, if you're crazy enough to get on this side of it, I can show you some of that. And so it wasn't much of it, really, man. I remember he wasn't there for all that long. He got an opportunity to go back to Austin. And I don't even think I really was officially named APD of the station. I was producing. Then they hired Calvin Murphy. I started doing an afternoon show with Calvin. I remember Madani asked me at one point, he says, hey, if you were to build this station around somebody that you've worked with here in town so far, if I could hire anybody, who would it be? And I said, well, I remember meeting a guy a little bit when I was at iHeart, KBME, named Carl Dukes. And I said, he was a really talented guy, good guy. You know, the situations there weren't giving him the spotlight that was meant to be. I said, I'd probably bring him over. And he started talking to him, and he brought him over, and he was able to hire him, and he gets credit for doing that. And then all of a sudden, on April Fool's Day, Madani says he's leaving.
You're thinking it's a joke.
Everyone
because it's
thought
April
it was
1st.
A joke. Right. Yeah. And he goes, I just got a chance to go back to Austin to run the Longhorn flagship station. And Cumulus was scrambling a bit. The station was just getting started, so we didn't have a lot of tractions ratings-wise, revenue-wise, this kind of thing. Can you tell your story?
We almost wound up in that building together, ironically, which we found out years later. I had been talking to Cumulus at the time when Madani left about possibly going to Houston. And right as we're getting into the nitty-gritty of it, we had gone back and forth. I had done a couple reviews of the brand, and it looked like we were trending that direction. And at the last second, a couple things changed on their end, and I just went, yeah, that's not the fit. And I think they said, listen, do we want to bring someone in when we could just probably keep this in-house? And then they obviously elevate you. We find this out later as we get to know each other. It's just weird how this, like, I get to know Carl Dukes, who you obviously know. He's now in Atlanta. Like, this business, as big as it is, it's still very small. And so it's crazy how these things turn out. But it was great because although we didn't wind up working together there, and we have since, you wind up getting a PD opportunity. Cumulus at some point changes and obviously sells the brand to Gal Media, who you then wind up working for. Take me through what that was like, because going from Cumulus, big corporate company, to locally owned David Gal, this is his bread and butter. It's got to work or he has nothing else. Cumulus, if it doesn't work, they can flip the format. They've got plenty of other options. How was that for you, adjusting from corporate culture to being more locally independently owned?
It was different. You know, that was a very interesting time because at Cumulus, and I really didn't deserve the PD job. I didn't, but it was obviously meant to be. And I took my bumps and bruises, and we built that radio station, though, up to be the top sports station in that town. You know, we really believed we could do it. And fortunately, Cumulus had some patience with us, and we did it. And Carl, myself, Julie Takahashi, we were doing an afternoon show. AJ Hoffman, Fred Fowler doing the Blitz at the time. Matt Dean actually started with the Blitz. We believed we could do something in that town, and we did. And we had really good GMs, Pat Fant and Peter Remington. And then at the time it was Donna Baker, you know, mm-hmm. We got the Longhorns. We really were building that station up well. And I'll never forget. I mean, we were doing some good things, and she comes down the hall one day and says, this radio station is up for sale. It's a part of a massive group of stations Cumulus is putting up for sale. And, we don't know where things are going to go. And it ended up that David Gow, who at the time was running 1560 The Game, KGOW, John Granato, Lance Zerline, Richard Justice, Sean Pendergast, these kinds of guys over there, they said he was going to buy us. And we, of course, figured we were all going to be fired. I remember I went and met up with David, and David said, actually, no, we see you guys are doing some really good things here, and we want to keep as much of this intact as we possibly can. But he's an independent, you know, it's an independent situation. And most people did come over. It wasn't the best fit for everybody, but most of the people did. But it was, I remember having to be a part of moving that radio station. I want to say it was Labor Day weekend. And it was just really different. Our studio was John Granato's old office. I mean, it had no soundproofing in there. And it was different having to get along with guys who you were competing with, who you were trying to put out of business. Now all of a sudden are on your team and you have to pass in the halls. And, you know, I was always grateful for David because he gave us a chance. He gave us an opportunity to come over and continue to still work for him. But, you know, Carl, in all that transition time, he got contacted by CBS out in Atlanta to build a station around him. I'll never forget him taking that opportunity and pulling me aside after a show and saying, well, he believes in everything that we're doing. This opportunity is too good to pass on. And I understood it entirely. So the afternoon show got blown up and it was a scramble. It really was. It was a challenge, but it was one that I was grateful for because there was a lot to learn in that situation. And the station is still thriving out there, doing very well with Fred and AJ now doing an afternoon drive. Right. But it was different, man, to go from that kind of structure where you have to work everything out from, hey, what does Jim Mahaney at Cumulus think in Atlanta, to basically I can walk down the hall and talk to David Gow and what do you think, and we could do it right there. It has its pros and cons for sure. But we were grateful for the fact that he gave us an opportunity to keep doing what we were doing.
I want to talk to you about your stops in Omaha and your current home here in Denver, but I want to ask you one last thing about Houston. 97.5, as we talk about a crowded marketplace, to establish yourself and be successful, you've got to have a differentiation of programming strategy to go against 610, which at the time has big signal, established talent, Texans play-by-play, 790's got the Astros and the Rockets. How did you guys go about making sure that you had a different identity, one that resonated to make you successful?
I mean, a lot of it, in my opinion, is just matchups. You know, you look to see, is there a lane or an opportunity to do something that isn't being done in this market right now? Because we were trying to out-Texan the Texan station. We tried that, and we did not do it very well. You know, we were trying to do what a lot of the other guys were doing, the KBMEs and so forth. But I remember realizing, because it was just not getting any traction, what I just said, is there something else here? And going back to my start of being a comic, my gut told me as I was listening to the market, 610 was very good at what they did, 790 as well. But I think we can add some entertainment and a little bit of edge to this thing. You know, we took a run at the Texans, multiple runs at the Texans, Rockets, Astros. It never worked out for us to be a flagship for those teams. So we realized, what's the space where it's just us against them and it's prime time, weekday stuff? And what can we do that we just don't think that they're doing a whole lot of? Well, let's be very knowledgeable, but let's be entertaining. Let's get some buzz. Let's find some ways to give people something to talk about other than just what you're getting with the knowledge and the X's and O's and these kind of things that a lot of our competition was very good at. So that was why when Matt Dean moved on, you know, we brought in AJ from Austin. I knew him from my stop out there. Very smart guy, edgy guy, you know, former military guy, cage fighter. I mean, he's just a very unique voice. And, you know, Carl, myself, Julie, we just kind of pushed it a little more and tried to generate some traction that way. And we just kind of shrunk our field down to weekdays in the hours that we were locally given to do something. And really, we tried to kind of out-knowledge, but more importantly, try to out-entertain the place. And it started to work, you know. And then we did get, through ESPN, we ran the World Cup and we got some major cum out of that. And we were able to keep a good amount of those people who really liked that style. And they're still doing to that style to this day. One of my proudest stories is Fred, AJ, and Jong Lee. Jong's not with the station anymore, but the Blitz is just such an awesome story because right now they're the top station and top show out there. Mm-hmm. And it came from nothing. You know, it was kind of like here. It was, oh, do you need a bunch of former players to be on the air? You know, that's what a lot of 610 was doing at the time. We thought, no, let's just get some people that know what they're talking about and be entertaining. And Fred was doing a weekend poker show, you know, and AJ came from Austin with his wife for not even a full-time gig, no insurance, but just believed that we could do it. And, you know, to this day, I'm incredibly proud of what they're doing, and they're still out there incredibly tough to beat, and they're still following a lot of that same mentality, which is you may have all this other stuff, but when you strip it all down here into that weekday space, it's on, and we've got a style that nobody's really been able to crack.
So you get this great thing in place and decide, as good as it is, I'm going to get out of here now, and you go to Omaha. And usually guys don't say, I'm going to go from market 6 to 74. But yet that's what you did. You go to run 1620 The Zone and News Talk 1290 KOIL. And then eventually, while you're there, you ascend to be the ops manager of the whole cluster. What was the thought process at that time? Why you decided to make the move?
It was interesting. I reached a point in my career, Jason, when I was out there, where I accepted I wasn't as good as I wanted to be, because I was doing a midday show at the time with Jerome Solomon, and I was programming a station. I was also a part of helping out with 1560, and I just wasn't able to handle it all as well as I would like, you know? And I remember talking to my wife about it and thinking, I feel like I should pick a lane here. You know, I can host. I've been able to do that now for, a decade in Texas, over that. But as I fell into this programming situation, I just kind of had to take a step back and realize I'm putting up more points here behind the scenes, helping develop shows, develop a radio station, than I am as an on-air guy. And I love doing that when I really thought about it. I love being behind the scenes and working with people. And I remember just looking for opportunities that would allow me just to do that. And I had some good conversations with some other markets, and it just wasn't meant to be. Bigger markets, markets I thought I deserved to be in at the time, you know? And I remember getting this random email from Tracy Gilliam.
Yep.
She reached out and said, would you be interested in being an operations manager? Didn't say the market. And I was like, but it's got all these different formats. So I called her and she was telling me, and I was like, well, this is straight up programming. This is not on air. What market is it? And she told me Omaha, and I was pretty turned off. I was like, come on. I mean, I'm in Houston. I mean, I've dipped my toes in LA. I mean, even Austin. I mean, there was a little bit of, I think I deserve better. And I remember my wife saying, well, remember you kind of thought that about Austin? And I said, I did. And I've been really fortunate because people like Donna Baker, Scott Masteller, who you know, and he's been great to people, and John Madani, these people, I called them all up about this. And they told me, they said, Dave, if you really want to pursue and focus in on programming, you need to take that job. You need to go out there. You need to see what it is. If you can go out there and you can run multiple formats, part of the angle with that too, because I love overseeing play-by-play, was I could do something that only one person, Neil Nelkin, has ever done in the business, which is where they take 1620, it becomes Westwood One for 8 days of the College World Series, and you get to learn how to do network radio for Howie Deneroff and Kevin Kugler. And those people really showed me that this is a situation where you can go get off the radar a little bit, get banged around a little bit, but if you're able to do something there, you're going to be noticed for it. And I remember getting there, and Neil Nelkin, who was great and who's still there now, I met up with him. I'm like, you know, I don't want to screw up what you left behind, because he had retired. And he said, listen, man, you do what you do here successfully, people are going to start to see it. So, you know, I remember telling the guys in Omaha, I remember Damon Benning, who's still a good friend of mine, who was doing Sharp and Benning at the time. He looks at me and goes, what are you doing here, man? And I said, you know, I see there's a lot of talent on this radio station, and I see a tremendous opportunity that I don't think I can get anywhere else. And I really believe we can do something special here. And I was really grateful because they really did embrace me. But I told them at the time, I did not think that this is where I was going to end up either. But it was a move that I'm really, really proud of.
Well, under your watch there, I mean, The Zone did incredible. You had some really successful shows. You brought up Sharp and Benning. Nick Baugh became a guy that's now started to hit some of the national stage, had big numbers in the market. Unsportsmanlike Conduct with Josh Peterson and John Bishop. All three of these shows annually rated high with executives, with the top 20 we do. Since you left, it's interesting because Nick Baugh's not there. The morning show got split up, and these were brands and shows that were doing really well. How was that for you? Like, stepping away, here you are, you spent some time. It really did you good to go there, but now you step back and you look at it from afar and you see certain things change. How'd you handle that?
I've learned that everything changes. I remember when I got to Omaha, and you just named, I mean, these people they're so talented, and I heard it, you know. Josh Peterson is one of my favorite stories too, because I remember he was the odds-on favorite to get fired when I got there. And I remember saying, well, what if I told you I came here because I think you have a ton of talent, I think I can actually help you get to the next level if you want to buy into this. But I remember, even like with Damon, I said, hey, you know, if you don't like working with your co-host, and I'm not saying Damon and Gary didn't, but I said to everybody in general, and if you don't like working with me, don't worry, it's going to end, I assure you. I don't know when, I don't know where, I don't know why, but I promise you it's just going to. So while we're in this, how do you want to look back? Do you want to look back and know you put everything you had into it? Or do you want to look back and be filled with regrets, be thinking to myself, I was always looking for the next thing, whatever it might be, or was I complacent thinking this would last forever? So, you know, now being out here and seeing that that's exactly what happened. And I remember, you know, I talked to Nick, you know, and now Gary was doing middays. You know, John and Josh are still doing great in afternoons with their producer, Mike Stibbs, and Shane is producing Damon right now in the mornings with Michael Sevier. And I remember texting both Gary and Nick when I saw this news, and I said, well, here it is. It's over. And I hope you can look back and say you poured everything you could into it, because the glass was going to break at some point. For whatever reason, it just does. So, you know, it's just life. I mean, you know, Nick Baugh, I know, has some amazing things coming up ahead. He's doing a great podcast right now, and he's doing Fox Sports Radio. He's got the work he does for Fox on for college hoops. And I know Gary is doing great things in middays. You know, Damon and Michael, I mean, you know, these guys I know are going to do great in the mornings there. But it's just the way it goes. And I tell, when I got here to Denver, I say, hey, you know, if you don't like some of the changes that we make, if you don't like me, I assure you, don't worry, man. It's not going to last forever. So what do you want to do with it while you have it? And in Omaha, which was a great town too, we were able to do some really cool things together. And I just found that's the healthier way to look at it.
So it gives you some perspective as you come into this situation where you are now. You're in Denver, you're programming Altitude 92.5, and obviously fresh new faces to build connections with, a lot of established talent in this building. Take me through the first year, because this brand moved to FM in September of 2018. You've had to make some lineup tweaks to get everything in place the way it's rolling now. If I was to ask you to give it a letter grade based on the first year, how would you define the progress of the radio station?
I'm really proud of what the people here have embraced. When I got here, I remember one of the managers here said to me my first day, you know, everybody thinks they're going to get fired today, don't you? And that wasn't my intention. You know, my intention was, because as I listened to the station, I heard a lot of talent. I thought it could use some direction. I thought some of it maybe needed some other parts. And I wasn't sure if I thought everybody really was the right fit. But, you know, we gave it some time. And for one reason or another, not everybody made it through the changes. But I'm really proud of the way that this team, from the producers and the hosts that did stick around, believed that, you know, this station wasn't gaining a lot of traction for a couple of years here. This is a tremendous market, right? We get to go up against one of the biggest sports stations in the country every day in 104.3 The Fan, and it's awesome to get to do that. But no one really believes that we can actually compete with them. And I told them I believe that we can. And they've bought into it, you know, mm-hmm. and they bought into the moves, and they bought into some of the different new parts that we brought into it. You know, the producers here are terrific. I mean, you know what the station was? You've been working with it longer than me. When you take a model of a radio station that was not getting any traction on the rating side, and the revenue was kind of in the same situation, and then the company says, hey, you know what? Let's not blow this up. Let's actually put it on FM. Let's flip a country station of ours and let's do this again. I mean, who does that, right? I mean, that's like a restaurant that's not doing well and you say, screw it, let's open another. So we knew that we've been tasked with something that this company believes in a lot. You know, I give it a B because I absolutely always think of the stuff that we can do better and that I can do better. I would probably give it a lesser grade because I just always look at myself and think I'm sure there's more that I could have done better. But for the crew here, the actual people, I do give them an A because of the mental toughness that they've shown and the embracing of the actual vision that we can do something that most people don't think that we can do and we still have not done, but we're working our way towards, you know, reaching some of our goals. I think that's a pretty healthy grade a year in.
I want to go into the weeds on that for a minute, because what's really interesting when you look at this radio station that you're running, the TSL for the brand is tremendous. TSL, for those listening who are under a rock and don't know what it is, time spent listening. But you guys are actually outpacing the other brands in the market. Now you don't have the cue. So when you look at it as a programmer and you go, okay, we've got this great TSL, which, just using your restaurant analogy, when people come in here to try the steak, they like the steak. But we don't have enough people coming into the restaurant. So, one, why do you think they're listening in such strong fashion to the brand? And what do you do to get more people into the tent?
Well, you know, there's only so much that we can do about that part of it, right? what we can do is create a product that we believe really matches this market. I mean, listen, going back to Houston, I spent a lot of time. I'm really grateful for the Nielsen people who had a lot of patience with me and my phone calls. Melanie Morris specifically, she gave me a lot of insight on what this Nielsen game is about. And it is a game, and they refer to it as a game. And the game is based on loyalty. You can do some pretty good things if you create a product that people are going to be loyal to you on. You know, you keep that TSL up, that turnover number down. If you're able to do that and you get some luck, you know, you get some meters dropping and some laughs of some people, then things can start to show some signs. And they've been showing more signs.
It also helps when teams in your market are interesting and good. I mean, you've got the Nuggets and Avalanche who've been good. The Broncos, even though they're not good, there's a lot of drama around it. And that obviously is going to make people flock to a radio station to hear more about those teams.
I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, I mean, this is one of those really unique sports markets that has all these different leagues. I think there's only about a dozen of them that can say that, you know. So it doesn't hurt. You know, we're owned by Stan Kroenke. He owns the Nuggets and the Avalanche and the Rapids and the Mammoth, and we carry the Rapids, Nuggets, and Avalanche here on the station. Part of why I believed in this when it came around was, as a sports fan, I see the Nuggets and the Avalanche are two teams that are on the rise, and play-by-play is something that eventually can absolutely dump some cum on top of you, and you try to keep more of those people, in the, some a good percentage of people in the net, and see if they'll stick around with you. But, you know, this is a football market. I remember when I went through this process talking to this company, as much as we know that this is Nuggets and Avalanche and Rapid Station, this is a football town. I mean, 104.3 The Fan at the time, they had Orange and Blue 760. It's all they do, and I don't blame them because that's what people want. You know, and some people were like, boy, you know, I can't believe The Fan. That's all they do is Broncos talk. I can't believe it. It's like, well, don't be mad at them. That's what the city wants. If they didn't want it, they wouldn't be doing it because they're getting the kinds of numbers that they're getting.
Correct.
So we knew we couldn't outfan The Fan. They're really good at what they do. They got tremendous staff at what they do. But one thing we are trying to do is just, I want entertaining, hardworking, well-rounded hosts. And if you happen to be a former athlete, terrific. But that's not what we necessarily need here. And this is a great town where the lifestyle in Denver and Colorado is active. It's young, it's hip. They like their entertainment. And so, you know, we're trying to reflect some of that with this radio station. We want this to be a one-stop shop for, hey, if you're a fan of all these different sports, you're going to get some of that content. But we know when I got here, we have to be a better football station too. And a lot of people didn't think that we could do that. And we've obviously got a lot to prove to show if we can actually do that. But there's some signs that show that there is an audience for the kind of style that we're doing right now, even in football season. And, you know, a lot of it, you hear this in our business, it's about pacing, but it does matter. But it's personalities, man, at the end of the day. It's like any team. Do you have talent? We have a lot of talent here. And a lot of it is guerrilla marketing. I mean, you know, we don't get the massive marketing campaign. Hey, I didn't have it in Houston. I tell our guys, it doesn't matter. Let's do what we can do here and make a product that when people find it, they're going to be loyal to it and they're going to stick with it. And the data shows that that's what they're doing. And we believe in time, more bodies will come and do the same.
You keep tabs on the format. So you know brands that do well, PDs that do well. When you look around the format at good PDs in this format, who are some people that you respect and think do a great job?
I tell you, Gavin Spittle, I have a lot of credit for him. You know, he and I had some fun together in Houston, and I remember when we passed his radio station, he made a great adjustment. He had Josh Innes, and he put him into a big spot, and they got by us again, and we battled for a good bit. I think Gavin's terrific, what he's doing there in Dallas against Jeff Caitlin. I think he's terrific. You know, he does a really good job with what he's done there with the ticket. You know, you got Mike Thomas out there, right, in Boston with the Sports Hub. And, I mean, what he's done out there is just awesome, you know. I mean, it's just incredible. So, you know, then there's guys that can kind of transition over, guys like Scott Masteller, who ran ESPN Radio and is now running WBAL out there, running the Ravens Radio Network, and now he's doing great things for News Talk. Armin Williams is a guy that I became friends with from my time just at ESPN Radio. He did a great job helping bring 104.3 The Fan here into a really tremendous spot. And now, ironically, he and I are friends. I move here. I was going to compete with him. Now he's in Houston competing with my old guys. And I kind of look at that from afar, rooting for everybody, obviously, in some way. But he's, you know, he's a very sharp guy, too.
So I wrap up with everybody with what I call quick hits. I'm going to hit you with four questions, just the first thought that pops into your head. The hardest part of running a sports radio station is what?
I mean, all of it is. When you play the ratings game, you know, you're kind of flying blind to who really, you know, has a meter. You can get really caught up in that game, and I really want to, but there's times you got to know how close do I really want to get to this, because you can almost get too close to it and overthink everything. So I think at times it's just try to not actually think too much. Sometimes it is to not manage too much. You know, sometimes in many ways, it's just knowing what not to do and to trust your people.
One noticeable thing that separates a good market manager from a great market manager is what?
Transparency is very helpful. Support is helpful. You know, sometimes this format you can work for some, I've heard and have experienced a little bit. Hey, that's the sports station over there. Kind of just do your thing. Don't screw up. But ultimately, we don't really have a whole lot of time for you. So you never really know where you're at on things. You know, here I've got a really good one in Brenda. I've been fortunate to work for some good ones. I've worked for some that I didn't really want to work for either for very long, because it just, you didn't feel that kind of support and that kind of transparency. I like to know where we stand. You know, like the book came out yesterday. I'm one of these people that I don't jump right into it right away. The score is what it is. Of course, I dive in like anybody, but it's more, what does the GM think? You know, if she thinks it's all right, okay, we might be doing okay. So I think it's just really knowing where you stand with people, with the person that you work for above you.
When hiring a host, the quality that matters most to you?
Entertainment matters to me. I think you need to be entertaining. And, you know, working hard is part of it, obviously. If you don't work hard, you're going to get run out. But you need to entertain. I believe you've got to be funny at the end of the day. You got to know your stuff. You got to be credible to get permission to kind of be able to have some humor. But I think at the end of the day, going back to comedy and Howard Stern, this is the entertainment business. And if you're not entertaining, I'm not sure that this is the fit for you.
All right. And then the final one. One programming decision you wish you could do over?
Probably early on, the first person that I had to fire was Jerome Solomon. You know, I was fired over the phone in Austin, Texas on a Saturday, and that's the way they wanted to do it. But I thought to myself, I never would want to do it that way. And I had to fire this guy over the phone. And I always regretted that, because I always think people deserve better, unless you're just a real knucklehead and do something so stupid. You don't deserve to step foot in the building. I mean, he wasn't that way. It was just a change of direction. And I remember the management kept being like, hey, have you tracked him down and told him we're going a different direction yet? I'm like, he's not... because he writes for the Chronicle. I'm like, he's not coming in. He probably knew he was going to get canned, so he wasn't coming in. He kept circling the block. But I remember that. I remember having to let him go over the phone, and it just felt very sick to me because I thought he deserved better, and I wish that I had pushed a little more as a programmer to find the time to have looked him in the eye and told him what the situation was as opposed to over the phone.
It's great to see you having success, man, in Denver. You're killing it out here with altitude. A lot of progress. Still a lot of room for growth, clearly. But I see bigger things coming, so keep it up.
You are a part of it, and it's great to have you. I tell our guys as you're here meeting, I always want to hear what other programmers have to say, and you always shoot me straight on stuff. It's good to have you a part of the process. You're a part of the successes that we're having, and you know we're going to ride the peaks and valleys out together, but it's good to have you on board.
Awesome seeing you, man.
Yeah, you too.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, BarrettSportsMedia.com.